Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
And if I'm starting with the Texans on a Friday before the weekend we're having, you know there's a good reason for it. So they were building that bully not that long ago. Remember, they were stacked on defense. Guys like Jadeveon Clowney, future Hall of Famer J.J. Watt. They had another future Hall of Famer in DeAndre Hopkins, an all-pro left tackle in Dwayne Brown. Then they drafted Deshaun Watson. I mean, this thing was setting up beautifully, right? You had a couple of fierce pass rushers, an elite wide receiver, a stud tackle, and a franchise quarterback. So if you're looking to assemble a roster, that's the kind of stuff that you dream about. That's what everybody in that league is looking to do. Get yourself elite players at those positions. And then it's not a matter of if you win a Super Bowl, but rather how many you're going to win. They were building that thing. They were building a bully and a monster. And the Texans have managed to do absolutely none of that, come to find out. Dwayne Brown shipped out. Jadeveon Clowney, DeAndre Hopkins, traded footballs. And now Deshaun Watson, really pissed. And my only question is, what took him so long? This has been a complete bleep show for years now. They're lucky that Deshaun is such a decent guy and a team player and a leader. They're lucky it hadn't already reached that point. Because just about every other person on the planet in his position would have demanded a trade months ago. I mean, you remember that somewhat cryptic tweet from earlier this week that emerged that Nick Caserio was going to be the new GM? At that time, remember, Watson tweeted, quote, "Something's never changed," end quote. It wasn't exactly clear then what that was about. Now it's a lot more clear because now we know, according to multiple reports, team owner Cal McNair had told Watson that he would be involved in the hiring process for the GM and the coach. And then they went out and they hired Caserio without informing Watson. Not only did they not inform him, he reportedly found out about that hiring on Twitter. Now, I'm not going to say that that's a dumb way of handling things. I'll just say that's a moronic way of handling things. I mean, that is really asinine. There are so many layers to this tiramisu of stupidity that is the Texans ownership right now. Let me read a few lines from a JLC report back in October. Quote, "Specifically, owner Cal McNair has already talked to starting quarterback Deshaun Watson about the direction of the team going forward and solicited his opinion, according to sources with knowledge of the situation." It goes on, quote, "While Watson will not be a formal part of the team that chooses the next coach, and McNair intends to hire the GM first, the owner does value very much the feedback of his highest paid player. And sources said Watson has already advocated for Chiefs offensive coordinator Eric Bieniemy," end quote. All right, so that there sounds like a pretty good plan. The owner wants to get a take from his franchise player as part of the process of determining who the next head coach is going to be. And then the player stumps for the one coach in particular, and it just so happens to be the guy who is the hottest coordinator in football. The guy who won a Super Bowl last year and is primed to win another Super Bowl. The guy who has helped mold Patrick Mahomes. So in any functional, well-run organization with competent ownership, I wouldn't say that it's a slam dunk that Bieniemy gets that gig, but he'd have to be at the top of your list. And then you go up another level when your franchise quarterback says, "That's my guy. That's the guy that I want." I mean, this is easy. This is a no-brainer, except in Houston. Because not only is Bieniemy not poised to get that job right now, he didn't even get an interview with Houston. Let me repeat that. According to reports, the Texans have not interviewed Eric Bieniemy for their head coaching position. I mean, that's not just dumb. That is criminally stupid. He should have been on your list from the very beginning and should have been underlined after Deshaun Watson said, "That's the guy that I want. That's my guy." Not only was he not on the list, these clowns didn't even bother interviewing him. Not only did the Texans not interview Eric Bieniemy, they're the only team with an opening to not interview Eric Bieniemy. So at this point, you have to go way out of your way not to interview Bieniemy. And when you do that, you're going way out of your way to offend your franchise quarterback. And for who? For what? Why would you do that? Even if you don't want Bieniemy as your head coach, you know what? Fire up the Zoom, interview the guy anyway. What's it going to cost you? A couple hours at most? And that way you keep your franchise quarterback feeling like you do give a damn about him. But instead, you don't interview Bieniemy, and essentially you're giving Deshaun Watson the big middle finger. No wonder the guy's pissed. Man, if I were him, I'd be screaming from the rooftops for a trade. I would find the highest rooftop there is and demand a trade nonstop until they did it. In fact, I would have been doing that months ago. I would have been doing that if I were Deshaun Watson when they didn't tell me they were trading DeAndre Hopkins. I'd be spray painting it all over H-Town after the coaching search debacle now. And then when it came to hiring Nick Caserio, according to Adam Schefter, quote, Watson offered input on potential GM candidates, but the Texans neither considered nor consulted with those endorsed by their franchise quarterback, end quote. So they didn't even consider this guy's advice. Awesome job. Really top-notch work. Oh, and it wasn't just that they met once or that Watson just referenced his thoughts in passing. Schefter says that Watson met with Cal McNair multiple times, that he didn't expect to be the one making the decisions, but he hoped that he could represent his own thoughts and the thoughts of the other players in the locker room. And still, they ignore this guy. I mean, what a waste of Watson's time. You know, kind of like everything he's done in Houston since he got there. Because a guy this good should be having way more team success than he is. Instead, you've got guys like Watson and J.J. Watt just spinning their wheels, wasting prime years of their Hall of Fame careers, while the rest of the organization is a complete bleep show. Hey, listen, it's Cal McNair's team, right? He can do whatever the hell he wants. I'm not even saying that he has to consult with Watson on any of this. I would just say that it would be smart to make sure that your quarterback is on the same page and feels like his opinion does matter. You know, but do what you want. It's your team. But what you can't do is tell him that his opinion matters and that he'll have input and then just completely ignore the guy every step of the way. Allegedly. So if that really is how that went down, that is self-destruction of the highest order. So to recap, the team has consistently dealt away premium talent for pennies on the dollar because their previous head coach slash GM liked to do that sort of thing. They tell their franchise quarterback they want his input when it comes to hiring a new GM and a head coach. Then they completely ignore his input. Not only do they ignore it, they go way out of their way to disrespect it and make decisions on their own. And then after they do that, they don't bother communicating with him about any of the decisions they made without him. In other words, if you were setting out to piss off the best quarterback in franchise history and create an environment where you have to trade him, then you could not have done a better job. I mean, you may as well just dare this guy. Dare this guy to demand a trade and force his way out of town. Hey, and by the way, hell of a spot for Nick Caserio to walk into, right? Through no fault of his, the star quarterback is pissed, and now he's got to solve a serious problem that he didn't create. Caserio. By all accounts, Cal McNair tossed Caserio the keys to a Ferrari, but made sure to set that thing on fire before he did so. Sharp business strategy right there. Like, the whole point of firing Bill O'Brien was that you could get a clean start, a full reset. And yet somehow they made it even worse. And given what a disaster the Bob was, man, that takes work. That is not easy. That takes a ton of work. Well done. So now why don't you just give Deshaun Watson and J.J. Watt away and just be done with it all together? That is a disaster. Hey, you want to hear something amazing? Discover matches all the cash back that you earn on your credit card at the end of your first year automatically, with no limit on how much you can earn. I mean, how amazing is that? In fact, it's even more amazing when you consider all the places where Discover is accepted. 99% of places in the U.S. that take credit cards. So, when it comes to Discover, get used to hearing yes more often. Learn more at discover.com/yes. 2020 Nielsen Report. Limitations do apply. We are talking to Jason Lockenfora. How you feeling about this weekend, and how impressed are you that we got this far?
I'm pretty shocked. I mean, this was quite a needle to thread, 256 games in 17 weeks, at this moment in time in our country. And, look, there were going to be issues. There were going to be compromises made. There were going to be games that were played under far from ideal circumstances. I think everybody knew that going in, and frankly, there were far fewer of those situations than anyone at the league office or at the NFLPA could have fathomed. It worked better than anybody expected. You know, I feel for the Browns right now. I feel for Browns fans. That is a less than optimal situation. But viewing it through the lens we have to view it through, which is, you know, the sort of overall idea of actually crowning a champion and getting through this in some sort of a standard way, it's going to require teams to operate at times without people on the field or in the decision-making process or on the sideline who are critical to your operation, but for the sort of greater good and overall health of and well-being of the entire league, cannot take part.
We are talking to Jason Lockenfora at GLC. In terms of the playoffs, I'll get to that in a minute, but I want to actually ask you about a team that's not in, and that's the Texans. Back in October, you had reported that the Texans were going to involve Deshaun Watson in the hiring process for a new head coach. What has happened since then, and where does that stand right now?
That's what they told him, and as I reported back then, he did have preliminary conversations with ownership and, you know, made it clear that you know, I hear great things about Eric Bieniemy. I'd love to have the opportunity to talk to Eric Bieniemy if you guys speak to him. And it, you know, I think he'd be great for me. And you know, I've heard a lot about him through Patrick Mahomes. And he was led to believe that he would, not a decision-making role, and not even necessarily a seat at the table, but that he would sort of be kept in the loop. You know, was given the impression that his voice matters. And the reality is they haven't interviewed Eric Bieniemy. I would be surprised if they interviewed Eric Bieniemy, in part because I don't think, if that's not someone whose resume and whatever it has them inclined to hiring him, and by they I mean new GM Nick Caserio and owner Cal McNair, then why interview him knowing he's probably not the guy or the direction we want to go in? And then now you're answering questions about, well, why wasn't it Eric Bieniemy? What didn't he do, et cetera? And they might not be able to skirt that issue now, regardless, Jim, but it's a weird one. I mean, there were basically concurrent searches going on, one led by a search firm with a group of individuals and people interviewing with the hierarchy of that team and being told, we don't want to be the no-fun team anymore. We don't want to be New England South. We want to go in a different direction. At the very same time, the owner pretty much knows in the back of his mind that I really want Nick Caserio. I really wanted him a few years ago, and lo and behold, he got another New England guy.
Hmm. Jason Lockenfora joining us once again. All right, Jason, this morning also you tweeted that Urban Meyer is meeting with Jacksonville today to discuss that head coaching job. What is your sense to the overall interest on both sides?
It's significant enough to reach this point. And this dance has been going on for quite some time now. I first caught wind of it roughly 2 weeks ago and reported on it for CBS going into week 16. And at that point, the Lions were sniffing around a little bit too, but that seemed kind of a little bit more on the sort of periphery, a little more cursory, whereas this Jacksonville thing had some heat to it. And the question was, you know, would Urban actually decide that for, you know, yes, for family reasons, for health reasons, for lifestyle reasons, I'm willing to go in a completely, you know, I'm willing to change all that up and go back into this meat grinder. And honestly, the pro circuit is even more of a grind than college. You're not going to have the personnel advantages week in, week out that he had in the Big Ten or even in the SEC. Yes, I mean, could is it absolutely going to happen, Jim? I would not say that. But there is substantial interest on both sides, and he very well may put pen to paper with that franchise in the next couple of days and decide to do this. I know he's talked to people about potential staff. So, yes, it is serious, but given his health situations in the past, and he's going to ultimately have to make a final decision about, you know, whether what he's doing right now and that lifestyle is the way to go, or again, whether he's ready to reverse course and do something that is going to be far more rigorous physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, all the above.
So we'll see. Jason, looking forward to joining us again. All right, so GLC, tomorrow's slate of games starts with the NFL today, and then you've got Indianapolis at Buffalo. You pointed out on Baldy's breakdowns that the Colts can run the ball now, and they seem like they've really figured something out with Jonathan Taylor. Let me ask you this. Is there a scenario where you could see the Colts holding onto the ball and eating enough clock to make the Bills sweat, or is that Buffalo offense just too explosive?
I've kind of talked myself in and out of this through the course of the week, but I do believe in the Colts' mindset. They're not really a dome team. These aren't the Peyton Manning Colts. This is a team that has a hard helmet mindset. They've been built from the inside out, offensive line, defensive line. It's not the precision pass game and the timing. Excuse me. It's more about bludgeoning you on the ground. Frank Reich's not interested in style points. Doesn't care about aesthetics. Doesn't have to be sexy. So, yeah, I mean, Jim, I think the equation is, can they get to a point where they're holding the ball, you know, 36 minutes, 35 minutes? Can they get their total number of rushes and completed passes, you know, somewhere a third north of 35 rushes? And if that's the case, you know, 15 to 20 high percentage completed passes. If they're able to do that against the Bills defense that was 19th against the run, then I do wonder, that's still a young Bills team, and do they feel the pressure a little bit? And could Josh Allen revert from MVP form to more of what we saw in the second half last year against Houston, or more likely somewhere in between, neither extreme? And can Phillip Rivers do just enough in the pass game? And then, more to the point, will the Bills pick him off a couple times? Because they have some guys in the backfield who can do that, the defensive backfield. Although I do worry about their sort of cover two scheme, and it seems like they're fairly vanilla, and it seems the deeper we've gotten into the season and the more banged up that they've gotten, the more the teams are finding holes.
We're talking to GLC for another moment or so. Hang in there, GLC. You're almost there.
And yeah,
tell Copper,
sorry,
tell Copper to get you a glass of water.
Yeah, we'll survive.
I know you will, man. You're always going to play through. Really quickly, as somebody who proudly reps the city of Baltimore, what do you make of what you've seen from the Ravens during that five-game winning streak that they're taking into the postseason?
Well, I mean, I can tell you just from obviously living here and doing 4 hours of radio a day here, people are still kind of in wait-and-see mode. The last 5 weeks have been absolutely historic in terms of their offensive production on the ground. I mean, 1,337 yards in five games. Averaging 6.4 a carry, it's pretty ridiculous. It doesn't happen in the pros. You don't run for 400 yards on a professional football team. But it's against the Bengals and it's the Cowboys and a bad Browns defense and the Giants defense that people thought was good against the run, but certainly wasn't on that day. And obviously, it's what can you do in the playoffs? I think if Greg Roman, their offensive coordinator, continues to stick with the script that they've gone with the last five games, and even if they're behind by 10 or 13 or even 14, doesn't panic and continues with this three-headed monster of a rushing attack, that they find a way to win this game. I think it would be a high-scoring game, and it wouldn't shock me if both teams are scoring into the 30s and maybe one of them into the 40s.
Yeah, one bonus for you, since you mentioned it, 4 hours a day of radio, JLC. Like, I know you. I know how much you care about it. I know how hard you grind. But is it tougher than it looks, or maybe is it easier than you thought it would be? What's the radio experience been like for you?
Well, I love it, and I knew I would love it, and I love it even more than I thought I would love it. So it doesn't really feel like work, because I just constantly feel like the more I can educate myself, and I live and breathe this, and we do talk a lot of football, not exclusively, I mean, Orioles, Terps too, but the more I can sort of discover things through talking to people or research or stats that surprise myself, I look at it as an honor to be able to then try to share that with other people here who have the same passion and try to make their fandom a little bit more informed and have some fun too. So no, it is, I mean, I didn't take it lightly. And it is tough, but it's a labor of love.
It's a great approach you have. He is JLC, an NFL insider for CBS Sports and CBSSports.com, a key part of the NFL Today's coverage tomorrow and on Sunday, and involved in all these other things too. Jason, great to have you back. Have a great night, and I will check with you tomorrow.
Thanks for having me, brother.
When you think of the Dodgers, you have to think of Tommy Lasorda. In fact, I'm not sure you're ever going to find a person more linked to a professional sports organization than Tommy Lasorda with the Dodgers. And that's not hyperbole. I mean, he was just that iconic. He spent 71 years with that team. He spent more than seven decades with that team, starting as a pitcher, then a scout, then a minor league manager, then a major league third base coach, then a major league manager. Also, some time as GM, a senior VP, a special advisor. 71 years. He won two World Series championships as manager. He won four NL pennants. He won the division eight times. And that success earned him a spot in the Baseball Hall of Fame. And if you know this show, you know Tommy and I spoke a number of times over the years. And we had some amazing moments. We had some great moments. Like if I were to say to you, word association, or what's the first thing that comes to mind when you think of Tommy and this program, many of you would quickly go to his rant about golf.
You tell me it's easier to hit that ball that's coming at you 90 and 100 miles an hour than hit that little white ball that's standing still? You know what I don't understand? Here's a guy playing golf, and a guy coughs. Hey, shh, shh. And the announcer goes, now, ladies and gentlemen, he is now going to hit off this tee. It's 425 yards. The guy standing up at the plate, hitting off of Nolan Ryan, throwing the ball 95 miles an hour, and 50,000 people are screaming. And you tell me it's easier to hit a baseball than to hit that golf ball? What's the matter with you?
Nobody like him. You wonder why I loved having Tommy on this show. Because he would always show up like that. You wonder why I loved having Tommy on this show. Because if Tommy had to choose between me and Larry King Live, who do you think he was going to choose?
A reporter called me, a friend of mine called me, and he says, a couple people in Houston had said that, you know, that you weren't coming back. I said, well, if that's what they say, then you go ahead and write it.
Right.
Because I had not made a decision. So nobody knows. Nobody could have said anything with real proof. You see what I mean, Jim?
Yeah, I'll tell you what, Tommy. That would really rock everybody's world. That was a hell of a tribute to you.
Big Bell operator has an emergency call, 870-4894
no, I can't.
Larry King Live. Do you want to release?
Who is it from?
Larry King Live.
No, I can't. Tell him to call me back.
Thank you.
That was the day of the emergency breakthrough. An emergency breakthrough. Remember those days. Are you old enough to remember that function of the telephone? Tommy Lasorda is talking to me live, and we're talking about some breaking news or some speculation, and quote, Larry King Live is on the other line trying to get through. And Tommy said, nah, I'm good. I'm talking to Jim Rome live. We had so many conversations, including conversations then about Pete Rose.
Every year in spring training, the manager has to read the gambling rule to the team. And the gambling rule specifically states that if you are caught betting on baseball, it's a one-year suspension. But if you are caught betting on your own team, it's a lifetime suspension. Pete Rose was caught betting on his own team. And that isn't a federal rule. That is a rule in baseball.
Tommy, is there no doubt in your mind that he was caught betting on baseball?
There isn't any doubt in my mind. Listen, nobody's too big for this game of baseball. We have a great game of baseball.
Tommy Lasorda never, ever pulled punches. Ever. I mean, that's the kind of game that he was spitting back then. When guys didn't, or guys wouldn't, or they wouldn't speak their mind. You know, and again, that I saw him in the David August showroom within the past year. So Tommy's 92 at that point. And David August, for those of you who don't know, David August is a clothier. He makes incredible clothing, incredible suits. Like the suits I wear and have for a number of years have been cut by him. A number of the people you see on TV, especially in our business, are wearing suits from David August. So I go in there and I see Tommy. Tommy's like in sweatpants. And he's kind of like casual. And he's in there, and he's a client. And at this point, I haven't seen Tommy in a few years. Maybe haven't even spoke to Tommy in a couple of years. And as I mentioned, I wasn't 1 foot through that door when he looked me up and down and kind of gave me a mother bleeping Jim Rome. What do you know? What do you know, Jim Rome? And it was so awesome. Like I laughed out loud. Like I wanted to hug on the guy. It was so good to see him. And like so true to his character. Like, still had that fire, man. That fire into his 90s. So Tommy was an absolute legend. Tommy was somebody who lived an absolutely legendary life, like larger than life, up until the very end. So his passing really is a tremendous loss for the Dodgers, for the Dodger family, and I would say for the game of baseball overall. Tommy survived by his beloved wife of nearly 71 years, Joe, as well as his daughter, Laura, and granddaughter, Emily. My thoughts are with those who loved him, those who were loved by him. And no, I don't play favorites, but Tommy was always one of my favorites. And he always made time for this program. And even sometimes when it had been a while before he had since last been on, he would call me out on that too. Like, yo, what's up with you? What's up, big league? Too good for me now. Never, Tommy. Always love having you on the show. Rest in peace, Tommy. And of course, there were so many other amazing moments with Tommy off of this show. I mean, those great moments were things that he did on this show. But we've known some of the things Tommy did in the clubhouse, after games, him getting loose on Kurt Bavakwa.
Tell you what I think about it. I think that is very, very bad for that man to make an accusation like that. That is terrible. I have never, ever, since I've managed, ever told a pitcher to throw at anybody, nor will I ever. And if I ever did, I certainly wouldn't make him throw at a 130 hitter like LeFay or Bavakwa, who couldn't hit water if he fell out of a boat. And I guarantee you this, when I pitched and I was going to pitch against a team that had guys on it like Bavakwa, I sent a limousine to get the to make sure he was in the motherfucking lineup, because I kicked that his ass any day in a week. He's a motherfucking big mouth, I'll tell you that.
That is incredible. I mean, that literally is one of the greatest sound bites in the history of the world. Not in the history of baseball, not in the history of sports, in the history of the world, in the history of documented sound, in any walk of life. That is one of the most amazing things I've ever heard, because he just builds to this incredible crescendo. Like, he starts off being a little perturbed that anybody would ever accuse him of throwing at anybody at all. And then he just ramps up, and then he's rolling downhill. To the point of, are you kidding me? Bleeping Bavakwa? I'd send a bleeping limo to make sure that bleeping Bavakwa got into the game.
Bavakwa.
And then the disdain and the emphasis on Bavakwa.
Bavakwa.
An incredible soundbite. And you got to admit, Bavakwa is
Bavakwa.
A great name. It's a great name.
Bavakwa.
A great name. Like, if you were talking about Bob Smith not being able to hit water falling out of a boat, it wouldn't be as good. Like, if he was talking about sending the mother bleeping limo to Smith,
Bavakwa,
it wouldn't be as good. But it's so much better that it was Bavakwa.
Bavakwa.
You know, so a lot of times when somebody passes away, it's extremely sad, and it's extremely somber, and it is those things with Tommy, absolutely. But when you think of Tommy Lasorda, and the way we're doing this right now, you know, I have to do it with a smile on my face, and you have to celebrate that life, because he lived an amazing life. Tommy did not get cheated. Tommy lived a full life. Tommy lived an amazing life. Tommy had incredible energy and passion, man, and fire. Every single day. Every single day. So I am sad, and it is somber, and obviously my feelings go out to his family and those who loved him, but I can't lie. I can't help but have a smile on my face when I think back about Tommy and the fire and the heat and sound bites like that one. Bavakwa.
Bavakwa.
Are you craving some protein after a good workout? This time, don't make a shake, don't eat a bar. Instead, grab a bag of beef jerky from Old Trapper. Why Old Trapper? Because Old Trapper beef jerky is tasty and it's tender, and it's made with real strips of steak and quality spices that are smoked over a wood fire. Old Trapper is a family-owned business that takes smoked beef extremely seriously, and you can taste it in every single bite. I mean, who wants dried, tough beef in a bag? Nobody. It's like eating a shoe. Old Trapper, though, is the real deal, and it comes in four amazing flavors: Old Fashioned, Teriyaki, peppered, and hot and spicy. So next time you want a great protein and energy snack that you can have anytime, anywhere, grab some Old Trapper beef jerky. Look for it in the Clearview bag. You can see the quality you're buying that way. Look for it in major retail stores near you. If you don't see it, ask for it by name, because no other jerky compares. Old Trapper, what's your beef? Head coach Brad Bronello is my guest. Brad, good to have you on. How are you?
Doing good, Jim. How are you?
Good, good. So it's been a little while since you and I have talked. So you're 9-1 now. You're ranked in the top 20. Bring me up to date. How you doing? And what's the mood like around the program these days?
Yeah, it's great. You know, we've got a really good team that has a lot of depth. We're playing 10 guys, double-figure minutes, and we've kind of extended our defense to where we're pressuring and picking up full court. I think that's really been good for this team, and I think, you know, this is a year when sacrifice is about as important as anything, both on the court and off, in terms of the choices that these kids are making with COVID and everything that's going on. So I think it's really fit our team, and so we're just trying to play a lot of guys, kind of run guys in and out, and our defense has been outstanding so far, and just really proud of our guys.
In fact, Brad, that's where I was going to go next. I was going to ask you about those two very things, the defense and the sacrifices that the players are making. For instance, it's not just that you're 9-1 and that you're ranked. You also are the number one team in the country in terms of adjusted defensive efficiency. For the last 3 years, you've been really good defensively, but it seems like you've taken it to another level this year. How would you describe the defensive identity or mindset of this group?
Yeah, we've changed here this year, because we play 2-point guards at times, and we have two little guys, and Alamir Dawes, who started for us last year as a freshman and got some good experience. And then we brought in a young man by the name of Nick Honor. And so those two guys are both kind of bulldog defensive guys that can pick up full court and really make it hard for the other team to initiate offense with rhythm. And so we've kind of extended our defense, tried to really be more aggressive. We're not a really big team. We don't have a shot blocker per se, and so even though we're a little smaller, we're just trying to keep offenses away from the basket as long as we can. And so I think the aggressive nature of our defense has been really good. I think our kids have really enjoyed it, and it also allows us to play more players, which I think in this year especially is really important. If kids are working really hard, practicing every day, and they're making all kinds of sacrifices to be able to play, you just want them to be able to get out there and have some fun and play. And so we noticed it right away. We made this shift in the summer. It was something that really took off with our team, and we've been fortunate that we haven't had to take any breaks with COVID. We've had good rhythm in our practices, and I think it's carried over to the games.
Brad Brunell is joining us, Clemson head basketball coach. You know, Brad, in terms of the players and what you're asking of them, as an example, Amir Sims was one player that was told he was going to play less. His response was, quote, "If you're not good with that, it says a lot about you as a player. At the end of the day, it's about winning. And if you're not okay with winning because you're not getting a lot of playing time, something is wrong with you," end quote. I mean, what's that tell you about him as a person, that that's what his response was and that's what his takeaway was?
Yeah, for people that don't know, Amir is a great player. He was a, you know, second or third team All-ACC guy last year. He's our returning senior, just a guy that made a huge improvement from his sophomore to junior year. And I brought him in and I told him, hey, you know, I think you averaged 32 minutes a game last year as a junior. Your senior year, you might only average 27 or 28, but I think it's going to help our team. I think it may even help you at some times. And he was great with it. And I think in this year especially, you need some older players that have been through the wars with you that kind of, you know, really are your sounding board to the team. And he's a remarkable young man. He's got an unbelievable personality, you know, not only for what he does just with our team, but how he is on campus. He's going to be a great ambassador for Clemson one day, and certainly a big part of the reason why we're having the kind of success that we are.
You know, I wonder, Brad, you're having a lot of success. Like, in your background, in your experience, what's tougher for the players to deal with, success or adversity?
Yeah, that's a hard one. I think, you know, human nature, when things are going well, it's challenging for all of us to keep our foot down on the gas pedal and still challenge yourself to work at a rate that you need to get better and to prepare the way you need to prepare. And so sometimes I think that can be more challenging than when you're struggling a little bit. I think people, when they're struggling, you know, your natural instinct is to go compete and go fight and figure it out, especially if you've got any competitive nature in you at all. And most of the kids here do. But when you're having some success, it's and everybody's talking about you, and you're doing all kinds of interviews like Jim Rome, it's hard to kind of go back in there and keep grinding. And you know, we're not a team that we have to grind. We're not overly talented. We're not, you know, we've won a lot of close games. We're going to be in a lot more close games. And so the preparation and the little things are the things that are going to separate our team from others.
I agree with you, Brad. I think that when things are going well, it is tougher to push yourself to keep grinding and keep getting better and better and better. That's why I asked that question, so I'm not surprised that that's the response. And then over the past few months, I've had numerous conversations with college and football basketball coaches who've talked about the added stress, the added challenges that their players have to deal with because of COVID. The ACC is tough enough year in and year out, but how much more challenging is it this year? And then how do you go about helping your players stay fresh mentally and physically?
Yeah, I think that's a big point, certainly with all of us. You know, one thing we did is I think you got to have tremendous relationships with your players. You got to be talking to them all the time, you know, about things well beyond basketball. And so just kind of checking the pulse of our team, we felt like, you know, we were going to let our players go home for Christmas to get 3 or 4 days away. They really hadn't seen their families very much. We've been going since the summer. And so I think that was really important for us. And our guys came back fresh. It's really helped us, but that constant battle of having a pulse of how your guys are doing, what they're dealing with, like we've kind of already noticed, we started classes back this week, and we can already sense a little more stress on our guys just with now all of a sudden, you know, we're back in school and there's more things going on, more responsibilities, and again, it's not a normal college experience. You know, they're not doing much else other than class and study hall and then meeting with tutors and then coming to the gym. Beyond that, that's about it. And so they've got to be unbelievably disciplined in their approach. And we've been fortunate. Our guys have been. And they've made the sacrifices necessary for us to be able to continue to practice and play and, again, not take a pause. And I know that's a little bit fortunate because you just can't be reckless in this. And I think, you know, you got to do the best you can with each decision you make and understand that it's going to have huge ramifications. And that's where our guys have really made the sacrifices necessary to keep us going. And, you know, anything can happen, and we can all get it at any time. And so when we do, then you got to adjust again.
No, it's so true. It is a big ask of everybody, and especially of young people. I've got a son in college, and we talk about these things all the time. And you think that you're impressing upon them the importance of this and the severity of this, and sometimes they get it, sometimes they don't. But it takes everybody to understand and buy in. And then you've got North Carolina tomorrow in Chapel Hill. Of course, it was last season that you beat them in overtime to snap that 59-game losing streak in Chapel Hill. I'm curious, how different does this game feel now that you ended that streak then?
Well, it's just been nice to not have to be asked about it, you know, not only this week, but usually in the off season, somebody will bring it up to your attention, like, hey, when an alum will ask you when we're going to end that thing. And so to get that past this was great. It feels a little different this year, but as much as anything, just because of it, of the nature of this season, it's just a different year altogether. You know, they're not going to have many, if any, fans in the stands. And so you're really just kind of going in there and playing the other team. And that's really what every game is like. There's not much of a home court advantage anywhere you play. So it does feel a little bit different. But I'm certainly glad we were able to put that streak to rest.
No doubt. Clemson 9-1 on the year. They're number 18 in the coaches poll. They've got that game against UNC tomorrow night, 7 p.m. Eastern. Their head coach is Brad Brownell. Brad, great to have you back. Thanks so much. I appreciate the conversation. Good luck this weekend.
Okay. Thanks, Jim.
Head. It's time. It's Super Wild Card Weekend. You're hitting at roughly 64% against the spread on the season in the NFL. Head, how you feeling?
I'm feeling awesome, Jim. Great football weekend, and now that I know that creepy Ronnie T's coming back, it really doesn't get better than that.
Hey, babe.
All right, stay in your lane, bro. We haven't even gotten into it yet, and he's already starting on, quote, creepy Ronnie T. All right, so we've got six games, Head. Let's get it. I am so geeked for the Bills getting their home playoff for the first time in a quarter of a century. I absolutely love Buffalo. I love everything about them. The Colts are coming to town. They have to deal with the elements and some members of the mafia that they're going to let in. My question for you, Head, are you going to mess with the mafia or are you going to take the Bills and lay the 6.5?
Jim, I'm going to mess with the mafia and take that table head on. Indy plus 6.5 there, I'll take that. Look, you talked about the Bills O, and I agree on all that. They're explosive. but I'm hoping they've peaked a touch early, kind of like Hammer himself. But this real play is about the Buffalo run D. And Indy will travel nicely here, Jim. Quentin Nelson, Ryan Kelly, and the boys will move that Buffalo Bills line off the ball. And Jonathan Taylor is hot. Indy's averaging 175 yards a game on the ground their last three games out. Third best in the NFL. Kill clock, and Uncle Phil can't turn this over. I like Indy to cover at +6.5.
How about this guy? A creepy Ronnie T blast, and he's going against the Bills already. All right, so he's got Indy +6.5. Head, Rams in Seattle. No one knows each other the way these two teams do. What we don't know, though, is who the Rams are going to start at quarterback. Jared Goff with his jacked up, surgically repaired digit, or LinkedIn legend John Wolford. Aaron Donald, head, is so badass, he makes it sound like it doesn't even matter who they start at quarterback because their defense is that good. Is he right, and do you want the Rams and the 3.5 points?
So Aaron Donald's right. He is a badass, but he's right. They're great at home, but they're not as great a defense away from home, Jim. They're very good, but they just allow 10 more points away from L.A. than they do at home. And the problem is here is Jared Goff. Look, he turns the ball over without a busted up finger, so I don't like that too much here. I would actually take the Rams if he were healthy, but I just don't think he will be. So he's going to have to rely on that run game to pick him up, and that's where Seattle's defense does good, to stop the run. I think weird-ass Russ improvises just enough to cover this. Seattle -3.5. I hate the hook at the end of it, but I'm still taking Seattle -3.5.
Is it too much to ask? Can you not editorialize about, quote, creepy Ronnie T and, quote, weird-ass Russ? Man, just stick to the picks. All right, so he's got Seattle -3.5. Bucks -8, big head, versus the Washington football team. This is what TB43 busted out for, to take a shot at ring 7 and jamming it up the hoodie's ass. Interestingly enough, the journey starts on the road against the 7-9 football team. The football team, James, they're not world beaters, but they do beat the hell out of quarterbacks. How are you playing this game?
Yeah, you got strength v. strength here, Jim. Tampa's O and Washington's D, but as always, Tommy has an advantage at every single skill position he has all year long. And the Bucks, they play better than anyone on the road. They're averaging nearly 70 yards more a game on the road than home, and an NFL best 33 points away on road games. Alex Smith is 5-1 as a starter, but he's also thrown 6 touchdowns and 8 interceptions. Great story. Not a great playoff QB. I'm going Tommy and his old ass reflexes -8 here, Jim.
Bucks -8. All right, then you've got the Ravens and Titans. They're getting after it again. Deck, I love the game. The Titans got him last year in the postseason in their place when Lamar Jackson was the MVP. Then they beat them this year in OT. Now Tennessee's got them in their place. They're a 3-point dog at home. That's pretty enticing. Who are you riding with in that game?
So a year ago, we called the upset and took the Titans, but now we're not. I'm going to go B-more here. The biggest difference here, Jim, is between the two teams is that Titans' defense, I mean, it's ass, to be accurate. They can't rush the passer. They can't play pass D and struggle against the run, allowing 4.6 yards a carry. They also rank 32nd on third down and 30th in red zone defense, Jim. They are also extremely undisciplined, and they haven't been the same since Dean Pees left. I'm going Lamar with no Rhea, and the Ravens finally beating the Titans -3 at Tennessee.
Did you say no Rhea?
Yeah, correct. Healthy Lamar, -3.
Healthy Lamar and no Rhea, -3. Write that down. Alvin, don't encourage it. Deck, Saints, -10 against the Bears. I'm still not sure how Chicago got in, but they did. And as we know, some really weird things happened to the Saints the past few years in the postseason. So you've got to think Sean Payton's going to have them ready for anything at all. Then again, Mitchell Trubisky played better down the stretch. You can have him and them and 10 points if you want them. Is there any chance, Head, that Trubisky's played his way into a new deal and any chance that you would roll with him in the points?
Hell no on all things Mitch Trubisky here, Jim, related. The fact is he and that O feasted off Detroit, Houston, Minnesota, and Jacksonville defenses, 4 of the 6 worst yard-per-play averages units in the entire NFL. And they get a Saints defense that's pretty legit here. One, they're rated in the top 6 in passer rating, yards per game, all major defensive statistical categories of Saints defense
Breathe, dude.
And also
breathe through it.
Drew Brees, he knocked off some rust last week. They get Alvin Kamara back, and they hopefully get Michael Thomas on the field. It looks like they will. I'm taking the Saints minus 10.
Big number. Saints minus 10. All right. We've got Steelers and Browns. You know how strongly I feel about the Browns. You know just how jacked up things are for the Browns coming in. Coach of the Year candidate, Kevin Stefanski's out after testing positive for COVID. Same thing with one of their best linemen, Joel Bitonio. The Browns never win in Pittsburgh. The Steelers' backups gave them hell last week. I know there's no way, Flight Deck, that you would pick the Browns straight up here, but would you take the Browns plus six?
Negative, Jim. I hit Pittsburgh at four when the line
negative
came out.
Ghost Rider, the
I'm hitting
cold.
It at minus six. I mean, I would. Pittsburgh's offense is garbage, but Cleveland's defense allows almost 30 points a game on the road, and now there's no Olivier Vernon. That doesn't help. You mentioned the injury to the stud guard. Horrible loss for the that offense against this defense. Also, this is a play-action offense to the extreme in Cleveland. No one in the NFL handles it better than Pittsburgh's defense. I got to go Steelers here, boss, minus six.
That is tough, but the logic makes sense. All right, listen, before you go, those are all six, and I'll run down those. I'll recap them really quickly. But before we let you go, what about the championship game on Monday night? It's still going to be played. Bama, Ohio State, what's the latest line that you've seen, and how are you going to play that game?
The line is eight, Jim, and I like Ohio State plus eight. I had Ohio State against Clemson. And the key will be Justin Fields, of course, throwing against that Bama defense. Florida and Ole Miss, they threw it against Bama, and they had success. Ohio State's offense is rolling. They had 639 yards against Clemson. I think they can move the ball. The biggest questions are Alabama's secondary and the Buckeyes' secondary. Ohio State is getting some flap for their secondary, but it's better than a lot of people think it is. I'm going Buckeyes, the Ohio State, plus eight.
You know, I actually like that. Most of the money is going to Bama, so I like that you're going the other way. He is the Flight Deck. Follow him on Twitter, at Big Head Bets. At Big Head Bets.
Ohio State
All right,
sucks.
JK, have a great weekend. Appreciate that. Thanks so much. Good luck.
Thanks, Jim.
Rolling.
Welcome to the jungle, a tremendous 2021 to you. I'm Jim Rome. Great to be here. What's cracking? Hope you had a great holiday season. It is great to be back. What's cracking? The Cleveland Browns are back in the postseason. What's some phone calls? It's been a long time.
Yeah! Very, very real that the Browns are going to go to the playoffs.
It's good to have you, Rod. How are you?
All about the Browns, man. I've been a fan since 64. I'm tortured what I am. Scarred, tortured.
You've been a fan since 64, or you were being waterboarded during that phone call?
Take a good look, Cleveland.
Touchdown, Buffalo.
If you're making a list of the three scariest teams in the playoffs, you better put the Bills on that short list. That's how good they are. They're looking to win the whole damn thing, and they might just do it, too. Tremaine Edmonds.
I mean, we approach every game like it's our last game. Guys out there flying around, guys laying their balls off.
I don't know.
His hand initially was under the ball.
There's not anybody anywhere not named.
Kind of a bang-bang situation.
That guy. Who didn't know he had a challenge in that situation? Totally unprepared.
Doug said he wanted to get Sudfeld into
We're
the
talking
game.
To Michael Lombardi.
Poor Al Michaels had to fly all the way across the country. He missed dinner at Toscano's to watch that.
At 40, my guess. How bad of a loss was that for Clemson?
Especially bad for Dabo Swinney, you know, who ran his mouth a bit. That's a bad look.
This crew has been forged in fire. They're battle-tested. They've gone through all these losses, all these quarterbacks. Man, iron sharpens iron. Their head coach is Brett Bielema.
Great to be on, man. I've missed a lot of things about college football, but not beyond with Jim Rome. This is a great opportunity, man.
But the only meat I eat is chicken.
If you're on a Sam Howell diet, pace yourself. And the obsession's real. You know who I need a call from? The Chicken Man.
Chicks love me, and I have a big rooster.
Quick and brief, but to the point. More violence in the NFL. The Raiders used to hurt people.
I don't think the league is short on violence. My man's rolling in with, like, carts and carts and McRibs. Excuse me, sir, what are you doing? I'm here to play, man. Where's my free room? How do you think I got in on this private jet? It's with all these McRibs. And by the way, that room, that free room you gave me, it's not bad. How am I going to put all my McRibs in that safe?
Brian Weber.
With two Bs. Billion Burgers.
It's over just that quickly.
Tom in Denver, you made it.
I'm good, Jim. How you doing?
Good, great.
Hey, you know, I woke up feeling dangerous today, Jim. Let's go ahead and go with Tombo.
Yeah, let's do that. Tom. There are thousands of people dying from COVID, and you're acting like this is something that a football team would use as an excuse to postpone a game. I can't wait to see how Nick responds about his daughter's tweet.
I'm not going to, so quit asking.
He is Chris Beard. You have never been a big TV guy.
I was telling Randy, my fiance, where are the commercials? He's looking at me like I'm crazy. He's like, there are no commercials. So, but that's when I used to get up and take a piss or go get a beer, you know?
Branson, what's going on? What's your beef?
My beef is with my coworkers who don't spray air freshener after they take a gigantic steaming dump. Like, seriously?
Every time I gotta change a diaper, it's like trying to reassemble my Rolex.
What does that mean? Why are you taking your Rolex apart?
I'm a horologist. I'm here for you, man. What do you want to know about watches?
No tear gas, no massive arrests, none of that. So I think it's
what we witnessed yesterday was an attack on democracy. It's an attack on America. It's not right.
It basically proves the point about a privileged life.
It needs to be talked about. It can't be ignored. There was no way that I was going to start the show and not address that.
Protesters are terrorists.
Talking to Ryan Garcia.
And I just went crazy with emotion. All my, the most realest emotions I could have had in my life. I mean, my mom was.
It's moms. It's cool,
man.
I
love my mom.
Respect to moms. Talking to Cam Hayward.
Once you experience, one guy, two guys having to deal with it, you understand that, all right, this is what's going to happen. We got to learn to bounce back from it.
What's the matter with you?
What's up, big league? Too good for me now. Never, Tommy. Always love having you on the show. Rest in peace, Tommy.
I sent a limousine to get the...
It's not the precision pass game and the timing. Excuse me, man.
Tell Copper to get you a glass of water.
Yeah, we'll survive.
I gotta lose the gut.
Happy New Year, bro.
There's never a bad place to floss.
Snake holster.
Did you trip?
Sitting on it.
Make it 2 million McRibs.
My goodness.
Thanks a lot, Bambi.
Hell no on all things Mitch Trubisky here, Jim.
Yeah, I can't describe her.
Happy New Year, brother.
Always a pleasure. Appreciate you, bro.
I mean, total reconstruction.
You rock.
Good night now. Good night now.